Welcome to Makers Figuring It Out, a show where we strive to educate, motivate, inspire makers of all skill levels with special guest makers, tips and tricks, do's and don'ts, and many things in between. I'm Steve Huber from Wolf Woodworking Creations, and joining me is all where? Jacob. Jacob, where? Jacob's not here today. Well, I guess it's just going to be me. Sorry, folks, if you came to listen to Jacob. He's got some work stuff going on, and, well, it's just going to be me. But we do have a guest. Luckily, you don't have to hear me talk for the next, you know, hour and a half. That would not be fun, because I'd just be rambling on and, you know, talking about whatever. But speaking about talking about whatever, we need to let you know that we have a Linktree account where you can go there. You can sponsor us by buying us a coffee. If you want to, you can go on Anchor, sponsor us there. Or we have some really cool t-shirts, so you can get lathed from our Teespring account. So you go check that out. All proceeds that we make from any of the stuff that you donate to us goes right back into the show. So I guess with that, our guest this week hails from the great state of Southwest Virginia. And I say that because it's Southwest Virginia is pretty much Kentucky. It's not like Northern Virginia. They're special, kind of special in Southwest Virginia. He's also a woodworker and tinkerer by night, but by day, he's an engineer. So he's got some brains in him. Looking back on his Instagram page, he does a lot of mallet making. And guess who he received one from? This guy. He helped me figure something out. When I screwed up one of my mallets for my 300 followers on Instagram, and the guy just got married in October, and it is AC from AC Nailed It. How you doing, AC? You want me to call you AC or Alan? Which one?
Go ahead and call me Alan. Why not?
Okay, we'll call him Alan because Alan's easier because I'll screw up AC somehow.
Only Bruce gets to call me AC.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm not as special as Bruce.
No, he's unique.
He's unique. Yeah, well, he was actually our first guest.
That's right. He was.
Yep. And I'll just tease a little bit. There's a little surprise coming later. Ooh. On down the pike. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Should I guess or no?
No, don't guess. No, okay. It's just a tease. Just teasing people.
That's
what we do here.
Keeps them engaged.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just throw things out there and go, all right, because if we told everybody, they wouldn't, you know, listen to the end. So, I mean, we've made some very productive changes to the format of the show, and hopefully it's translating to actually listening when you're listening to the show, and it doesn't, you know, we're just trying to make this so there's not as many commercials in the show itself. Even though we do have two sponsors that we love and care about very immensely, and because they give us money every week,
so gotta pay the bills. Month.
Yeah, you got to. You know, that's how it works. Alan and I actually met in last year. Oh, man, happy friendiversary!
Yeah, that's right. Just a little over a year now, I guess. What was it? Probably end of February.
End of February. Actually, I'll tell you what date it was. February 20th.
Okay,
that was the day of Workbench Con.
Gotcha. Yep, so, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, we met down there, and he was kind of a cool dude, and I've been trying to get him for months, trying to get him on this show, but, you know, he's a busy guy.
He's booked up.
Engineering, you know, and he's always on somebody else's podcast. You know, he's a well-rounded dude, just not as rounded as I am.
makes rolling down the hill a little easier.
Yeah, it can make you really dizzy if you know, the bigger you get, the slower you get, and because you don't want to fall, because there's a lot, because when you fall and you're this big, it kind of hurts when you hit the ground. It's not like when you were, you know, you see little kids, they just kind of just fall backwards and right on their butt. Adults, we fall down, we break our hip.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No, I don't, because I'm getting that age where breaking hips is not a good thing for some reason. I don't know why.
But yeah, we were anyway, a little more fragile than we were when we were kids.
Yeah, so for those of us who, or those of the audience who, you know, really don't know who AC is on, and your channel, AC Nailed It because I always, for some reason, we were talking about this before the show. For some reason, I put the S in there, and Alan was like, it's nailed. It's past tense. And I went, oh, I like nails it better.
Yeah, it's more proactive. It's more in the moment, you know.
Yeah, you know, so if he changes, folks, if he changes his, you know, channel, you know, or rebrands and it's Nails It, you heard it right here on this podcast. I'm going to take all the credit. I'm going to take all the credit for it.
Yeah, Nailed It was so yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it was still 2020.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
We got to get back in the swing of things, get back to normal. So where should we start? Well, we don't want to start where little Alan, you know, grows up, because I asked him, I thought, you've been pretty much an engineer your entire life, and you came back with us. Let's just do that again, because it was kind of funny. So, Alan, you've been an engineer all your life, right?
Well, not right after I was born. I had to get to college first.
Yeah, well.
Something like that.
You kind of, well, I don't know, little engineers are out there.
No, I did say that I was probably an engineer in high school, but I didn't know what it was called at the time.
So what did you think it was?
Besides driving a train?
Yeah.
I assumed engineering was more scientist. Like, I kept thinking of like the white lab coats when I was a kid. And, you know, I didn't really realize that engineering is more just problem solving, figuring it out, and design and things like that. It's, really, to some extent, I think most problem solvers, woodworkers, creatives, metal workers, whoever, they are doing an engineering of a sort. Now, there may not be, let's say, a strict math background or something behind it, but they are having the problem solved. And I think, to me, engineering is a lot of problem solving.
Yeah, engineering to me would be a lot of math. And I didn't, I don't know. When I wasn't, if I would have gone straight to engineering when I was in high school, I probably would have made it. But definitely now, it's fine. It's science. That as you grow older, your brain becomes less plastic or placid or something like that, where you store different kind of information than you do when you're younger. When you're in high school and college, you're just memorizing crap. And in college, you're supposed to try and, you know, they give you some knowledge and then you kind of figure it out. But as you get older, that's when you can actually apply it, because you know the formulas, but if you don't know what to use the formula on, what good is the formula?
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what the problem solving comes into. You have to, you know, I guess when it comes to the math side, if you have to figure it out using the math, you have to know how and where to apply it. But I agree, when you're young, you're a sponge. When you get older, it's harder to kind of absorb stuff like it was when you were younger. But you're always learning. I mean, I know you are.
I'm always learning.
Yeah, in my career, in my everyday life, I'm always picking up some new skill. You know, like just a couple of days ago, I had to fix a dryer in my basement because it decided to quit working. So hop on YouTube, figure it out, you know?
Yep. So did you actually figure it out if you went to YouTube, or did you watch somebody else do it and then you repeated what they did?
I couldn't find the actual video, so I had to figure out what I had to look for to find the problem.
That is actually a really good point, because it is, I don't know if anybody else has this problem, but I do when I'm, you know, trying to look up things on the YouTubes, is I know what I want in my brain, but I can't translate that to my fingers to type on the screen to say what I want you to look up. For example, all right, I'm a geo nerd, so I like geology, especially, you know, topography and of the Pennsylvania region, because of the Appalachian Mountains, how they formed and folded and all this other. And there's a certain formation in Pennsylvania that looks like a ziggy zaggy line. And I know they're ridge tops, but I didn't know how that zigzag formed. I know how the mountains formed, but how they got to that zigzagging position, I was like, okay. So I started searching on Google. I'm like, zigzagging lines in the Appalachian Mountains. That didn't work. And then I'm like, okay, fine. Let's make it more, you know, the geology of Pennsylvania or topology of Pennsylvania, blah, blah, blah. And that didn't come up. I mean, I got some stuff, but not what I was looking for. And then I just had to start scrolling. I'm just like, okay, let's use, because I mean, when the internet first came out, you didn't type a sentence in the search bar. You had to figure out the keywords. And I don't even know if that's how it works anymore. Because if you just put, you know, you're looking up, you know, how to make a mallet, like, you know, how to make a mallet or how and mallet. And then it comes up with a whole bunch of crap.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find it. But finally I did, just by trial and error. So it's not that easy, you know, to actually find, if you're looking for something really, really specific, it's really hard to find it on YouTube because you have to have that, you know, the right word.
Yeah.
To tell it what to search for.
And sometimes I'll hop on Google and just start firing away, you know, search phrases and keywords until something pops up. And I'm like, ah, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Then once I have the keyword, then it makes it easier to find, you know, what you're looking for in YouTube or wherever else.
Right. And that's the one thing that when you make videos, make sure you put those keywords in because, well, that's what the algorithm searches mm-hmm. for in Google.
Yeah.
Or in any search engine, actually.
Right. Yep.
It uses a bunch of keywords and gets rid of the, you know, it'll look at the how and it'll look at, you know, it'll fix a dryer. That's all it needs.
Right.
And then it
finally serves you a bunch of advertisements.
Yeah. Well, not for me anymore because I pay that $8 a month because it's actually well.
Oh, worth the ad block on YouTube.
Yeah. I was like, I don't want to pay these people $120 a month or, you know, a year, whatever, to not see commercials until you stop seeing commercials.
Yeah.
And then then you're like, this is well worth it.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. It's well worth the $8 or $9.
I'll probably look in at it sometime because I watch more YouTube than I watch TV, honestly. So, I mean, just to not have to hit the stop, scroll, skip, whatever the button's called on the screen.
Right.
You know, after 5 seconds or whatever. Yeah, it'd be worth it. I can see that.
Yeah, it actually is. If you can, you know, if you can afford two coffees a month, you could afford, you know, to not have commercials in YouTube videos, which is, you know, I'd give up two lattes a month just to be able to not have commercials in YouTube.
Or brew it yourself.
Yep, definitely. So what is your specialty, AC? I mean, you're not really all over the place. I mean, we know woodworking, but do you have any specialty of the woodworking area or do you just anything that comes to your mind?
No, I actually kind of am all over the place. I don't have a niche. I mean, I like making mallets. If I had to pick one thing that I enjoy making more than anything is mallets, but I haven't even made that many. I do metalworking, woodworking. I just bought a CNC. So once I have some more space to really get that thing up and running, I'm going to really dig into the CNC world. But yeah, I do 3D printing, just general purpose making in general. I mean, if I can find an idea for something that I want to try to execute, I will, whatever the material, whatever the means, I will go for it.
Whatever that medium is,
it
doesn't matter. So you're not you're a maker. You're not strictly just a woodworker.
Right. Yep.
Which I don't know. I don't know how you would consider yourself, you know, something other than a woodworker. If, you know, you dabble in a little bit of metal just to, you know, stiffen up the wood projects. But to me, to be a real metal worker, you build something out of metal, not just like, you know, C channels. You know, for, mm-hmm. you know, the epoxy tables, you know, if you see them put C channels in to, you know, help strengthen the main thing, that to me is not metal working.
Right.
We're taking it to the metal shop and saying, hey, could you weld these two things together?
Yeah, I'm not, definitely not blacksmithing. And I consider blacksmithing to be a real sort of true form of metal work.
Yeah.
I just do cut pieces, weld them together. I've done some things like, kind of a large custom shelf with metal angled legs, side pieces and legs. And that was just a lot of repetitive cut, weld, you know.
You also did a rocket stove, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. That was a kit that Richard at 42 Fab sells. And I picked up one of those kits and they're good for practice for sure. And they're kind of fun to throw some sticks in there and set it on fire, you know?
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of what they use for, I can't remember the name of it, but making charcoal. I mean, they still call it a rocket stove.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an outer stove and an inner, So it's basically an outer oven, and then there's an inner oven, and you light the fire, and basically you take all the chemical or anything that can burn from the wood, and you just take it out, and you're left with charcoal.
Interesting.
And the higher the temperature, the more the more carbon you're left with. So I mean, that's what charcoal is. It's just pure carbon.
It's basically shogi bon.
Yeah, pretty much, just to the umpteenth degree.
Right.
You know, and that's how, I don't know if anybody knows this, but that's how charcoal got started in the United States, was actually in the car industry.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. Ford, because when Ford came out with the Model T or Model A or one of those black ones, they had wooden wheels. So there was also wooden seats, and, you know, there was a lot of wood inside that metal car. And so they had, Ford didn't want to waste anything. So he took all the scraps from, you know, the woodworking part and made charcoal and sold that.
That's awesome.
And that's pretty much, it. I think that's kind of how Kingsford came around. But anyway, that's how charcoal became a mainstay for, you know, pretty much every barbecue that we have.
I feel like I remember hearing that either the shipping crates that the car parts are delivered in became part of the car too, or something to that effect. I forget
that's what it was. That's probably it. I mean, yeah. He was, he didn't like that's to efficient. Waste anything. He didn't like to waste anything. And I'm kind of the same way. I really, you know, I'm one of those guys that keep the little small scrap of wood. I may need this somewhere as a shimmer or something. And
oh my gosh. You should see my workshop right now. I'm having to pack all that up and get ready to move it. So the scraps are going to have to go. They're going to have to become heat or something, because it's a lot of weight.
Really is. I moved up here. When I moved up here, I actually was like, okay, do I call all my friends up down here and let them just take all the wood and they can do whatever they want to with it and have a bonfire? Or is it cheaper for me to take it up there? It's because of the cost of, you know, like Paduke and Purple Heart and things like that. And I was like,
The fine woods. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, nope, all this walnut that I have and the Paduke, and nope, I'm going to have them pack that up and ship that, because it's cheaper than buying new.
Yeah, I can see that.
And if I would have known, you know, what wood prices were going to be doing, I would have brought all my 2x4s. And
you brought your pine up too.
I really would have, because I couldn't, I mean, I've seen it on Instagram, and I was, you know, like, oh, it went up like $1 or $2 or something like that. And no, I had to go look back at one of my receipts, and it was, I think I paid like $2 for a 2x4, 8 foot long.
Yeah. And yeah, now they're like $2 or $2.50.
Yeah. Now they're like $17-$20 per one. I was like,
whoa.
Yeah, they're up there. $10 sheet of plywood is now $60.
It's definitely gone up.
It's bad. And of course, you know what they're blaming it on is COVID. So because the production facilities dropped down and blah blah blah. And then they're blaming the makers, because you locked us in our houses for a year. What are we gonna do? So people started making stuff and DIY projects of the house. So nobody was feeding the lumber industry at that time. So
I'm not taking any blame for that. I don't think the maker group is quite large enough in volume to be the ones responsible. But
yeah,
they can blame us all they want. I'm not buying it.
Me neither. I'm not buying it. But if they give me $1,000, oh, they already did. That's right. That's off and not goats. That dark place. Anyway, so we were talking about things. So you really don't have you haven't found your niche yet. You just know it's woodworking. And but how did you, let me just go with woodworking, because that seems what you do the most of.
It is. Yeah, it still is for sure.
Yeah. How did you, come to love woodworking?
It's a good question. I
try every once in a while.
Yeah. Did you come up with that on your own or?
Oh, actually I have it written down.
Oh, okay. Nice, nice. Yeah. I've been messing with. That's a
good question. That's why we're at it. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We gotta write this down. Anyway, sorry.
Podcast gold, right there.
Yeah.
My dad was into it when I was young, and I've been messing with woodworking since I was a kid. Whether it's in his little garage workshop, cutting some things out on the bandsaw, or you know, helping him sand small wooden trinkets. My mom owned a craft shop when I was younger. she did like flower arrangements and wooden painted items. So he would go out and make like, I don't know, ducks or whatever, little items that she would paint and resell. And so, you know, everyone loves the sand. So here you go, Alan. Here's a pile of stuff. Go sand it. You know, here's a, you get a penny each or whatever is my problem. Is my fee for doing that. But
yeah, that's like, well, everybody hates sanding. So we're going to give this to the kid.
Give it to the kid. There you go. But yeah, so I messed with it when I was young and I built a couple little things here and there. Pinewood derbies back in elementary school with the Boy Scouts and or the Cub Scouts or whatever they're called. And then kind of set it down, didn't do too much with it through college. And when I bought my first house, you know, you have to build your own shelves and you have to repair your house and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, that's great.
I got, yeah, the cheap little hand-me-down tools from my dad and a couple little things here and there. And just build shelves and things like that. And then the switch turned on in around 2001. The switch. The coworker of mine bought this book called Building a Bluegrass Banjo, and he was going to build a banjo from scratch, obviously. And at that point, that seemed like such a different world. It seemed like an unattainable thing. You know, I am building shelves out of plywood, and he wants to build a banjo from scratch. And I latched onto that idea really quickly. My granddad built and played banjos and dulcimers and fiddles, and he built banjos probably through the 70s and 80s for some side income, you know. And so I always saw all these banjos my granddad had built. And when I was a kid, didn't mean much to me, you know. I wasn't really into music that much at the time, and didn't think much of it. But in 2001, I latched on this idea about building a banjo. And that was my first, I call real woodworking project, was, you know, building my first banjo. And to say that was a learning curve is an understatement.
Crazy. Most people start with a shell for, you know, or, you know, some, you know, toys and cutting out on a, you know, I'm going to build a banjo.
Well, I had done the shelf thing. I'd graduated from making shelves and little cabinets and stuff like that, but.
But a banjo is a little more intense than, you know, 2x4s and a, you know, a shelf.
Right. Yeah. It was definitely a learning experience. I mean, just finding maple. I didn't really have access to a lot of those wood. So, you know, I'd go out on, I guess, probably eBay at the time and pick stuff up or wherever I could find the woods to make these things. So yeah, that one, I built it. It plays. It's not great, but it does work, you know. But that process, like, just lit a little fire into my backside to just keep on building more instruments and things like that. So really, I started off the whole woodworking sort of, you know, rabbit hole building instruments. I've built a few basses now, a couple of banjos, I think 3 banjos and 3 or 4 basses. And if I had more time to dedicate to it, that would be my thing. I think making instruments would be the thing.
Really?
Yeah, but I'd have to sell them because I'm already running out of places to store them. I can't just keep building, you know, I can build 100 mallets and have a place to put them. I can't build 10 instruments to store them because they're kind of too big.
Big, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I see you do have 3 guitars in the background there. Are they all bass or are they?
Yeah, those are all bass. This one here, the blue one, I bought. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the instruments on my wall, you can't see them all, but those are all hand-built.
Nice. Very nice. I don't know if that's an amp on the floor. I'm just looking through your, you know, checking out your background and stuff.
That's my practice amp.
Yep. I know how to play a little guitar.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, poorly.
How long have you been playing?
Poorly? Pretty much all my life.
Okay. Since you were born?
Yeah, since I was born. Nice. I actually got my first guitar when I was like 10. Okay. I didn't know what I was doing with it. And, you know, I just air guitared it with actual guitar.
Yeah.
That's what fun. I did. And then one of the ex-wives bought me a guitar for Christmas. And that kind of got me going. I was more like, I wanted a piano, but you couldn't tell her that because, you know, that's not a good thing. You know, somebody gives you a very thoughtful present. You're like, but I always wanted to learn how to play the guitar. And then I learned and then I forgot and then I haven't picked it up in years, but I still have 2.
Yeah, it's one of those things you gotta stick with if you want to, you know, keep improving and stuff.
Yeah, but well, what I'm trying
even
to do
just
is
doodling is fun.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, let my fingers forget the original positions. You know, that muscle memory, I'm just trying to let them forget so they can actually relearn the proper way.
Okay. It is easy to learn bad habits. I did that early on too.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just trying to figure them out. It's kind of like if you watch, you've ever seen Friends, it's like the claw and the crab or something like that. What Phoebe was trying to teach Joey how to play the guitar, and it was poor. And that's pretty much how it was for me. I'm like, okay, oh, I could cheat here and I could cheat here. And you should not cheat when you're learning how to play an instrument.
True. Well, just learn the bar chords and you're good to go.
Yeah. And well, and don't change. You know, and you know, there's a lazy way to play an A. It's what you lay your pinky over to three strings.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the proper way where you use your middle ring and pinky to hold down the same three strings. But I've also learned that sometimes it's easier to transition when you're actually using the proper techniques. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's easier to, you know, because going from like a C to a D or something like that, or an A to a D, it's just moving a couple fingers. And I just remember the first time that ever happened. I just remember I had to move like two fingers and it just automatically happened. And I stopped.
Yeah.
And I was like, what happened? I didn't do that. You know, I mean, so it actually can be kind of fun, but
I'm sure there's a reason they teach the quote proper way to do things. And that's gotta be why. I mean, it's probably tougher to begin with and easier in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, and then they, you know, it's just like playing the core or playing the, what do you call that? The scales,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's, you know, it's boring. It, you know, most people like myself who want to get into guitar, guess what we do? I want to play Metallica.
Yeah,
you know, or
that's even easier. It's just power chords, right? Except for, you know, the occasional Kirk Hammett solo or pieces.
You know, like Nothing Else Matters. It's
true. That's a good song.
The very, very first four, just four strings. You don't even have to touch the guitar. You're just playing those four strings, and then you got to start. And then it's a bunch of pickups and then slides, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, the right hand is strong on that one.
Yeah, and it's just kind of weird. Because I play, and that's the one thing. It's like, so am I playing the guitar with my left hand or my right hand? I don't know. You know, I strum with my right and I, you know, finger with my left. So I
guess you're right-handed.
Yeah, I'm right. Yeah. But
I'm right-handed too. And whenever I say right hand, I automatically assume you're plucking hand. I guess I should, you know, say plucking hand since some people are left-handed and they pluck with their left hand.
Yeah, and there are some guitars that you could just flip the strings around and it's a left-handed guitar.
Talk to Jimi Hendrix about that one.
Yeah.
Or just flip the right-handed guitar over and play it backwards.
Right. It doesn't
left.
Work. Oh,
it does for him. Yeah, he's got the small string on the top and the big string on the bottom.
Oh, yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole different fingering.
Well, there's a fellow named Mono Neon, a bass player. He plays a five-string bass, I think, upside down backwards like that. So he's got the small bass string toward his head and the fat one away, which blows my mind that he could even do it that way. I think there's actually a few bass players who do that, but it's definitely, once you get used to the standard way, it's, you know, any kind of changes just messes with your head.
Yeah, I should have started when playing bar chords or something like that. Nope. No, I had to finger all the, you know, the regular keys because I'm like, oh, bar chords are harder. Bar chords suck.
Did you ever get a piano or a keyboard to play with?
I did. Then I gave it away.
Oh, okay.
Because my buddy came over and he was like, hey, let's just jam out. He got on the piano. I'm like, what?
He's got some experience, huh?
I'm like, you know how to play the piano too? Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I'm like, I hate you.
There's these guys out there who can just play it all.
Oh, man, he could. He was gifted. He was really gifted. But he
sounds like it.
He'd come over every 2 weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he'd stop down and he'd play for like 2 or 3 hours. And he's like, you're getting better. I'm like, oh, thanks.
Cool.
And yeah. And then we gave a little concert out. And when I was stationed in Hawaii, it was a very bad concert. And I wouldn't have, luckily, nobody paid anything for it. But you know, it's just kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So how long ago?
No, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, how long ago were you in Hawaii?
2007 to 2010.
Okay.
So it's been a while.
Sure, a few years.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. The other April 22nd was 29 years that I left the great state of Pennsylvania to join the military. I was like, huh, I'm back home 29 years later. Nothing's really changed.
You found that a lot.
Yeah. So are you originally from West Virginia, Western Virginia?
Yeah, I've been in Virginia my entire life. I was a couple hours north of here. That's where I grew up. And then I moved down to this area for college. And I stayed here after I graduated. I've been here ever since. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so you're really close to Kentucky and Tennessee and West Virginia out there, right?
Pretty much. I can get to any of those three states within
an hour.
A couple hours. Kentucky's maybe a little further. I have to go through West Virginia to get to Kentucky, but I can get to Tennessee. I used to get down to Bristol, not too unfrequently, and that's only about 2 hours from here. I'm up in like the Blacksburg, Virginia Tech area, in case anyone's familiar with that area of Virginia.
You're close to 81.
Yeah, we were too far apart when I first met you. I'm like, yeah, you're down in Johnson City or something like that.
Far away. That's right. We were driving up to see my dad when I lived down in Tennessee, and I was like, hey, we should stop at AC's house. And just something was going on that weekend that you couldn't. I was like, there's always another time that I moved to Pennsylvania.
Ah, yeah.
So now we can only see each other at WorkBenchCon
Zoom meetings.
On Zoom meetings, yeah. I mean, it's gonna be it's gonna be weird, because I remember the first time meeting Bruce Ulrich.
Mm-hmm.
And because you see him on the video and you're like, normal size, you just think he's like normal sized. And then you meet him and it's like, you are a tall person, aren't you?
He's tall. Bruce size. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he's one of the first people I met at the first WorkBenchCon. I went there and he's one of the first people I recognized out in the crowd kind of mingling. I'm like, oh, that's Bruce.
So you had the same reaction that I did.
Pretty much.
The first year you went.
Yeah. Like,
oh, that's so-and-so, and that's so-and-so. I got to meet them. And
yeah. That was neat. That was a neat experience.
So is it better the second year because you've already gotten all that, oh, my God, that's so-and-so. Then the second year is probably, hey, what's going on? And then you actually, I've done your networking already. So that the celebrity shock, I guess, if you want to call it that, is gone. So now you can actually work on connections and.
Sure. I'd say there's a lot of that. There's definitely, when I first got there, I'm not like massively social, outgoing kind of person. So to be surrounded by what was maybe 150 people that year, I think is kind of smaller, a little overwhelming, but I quickly made some friends and got to chat with some people. That made the next year a lot easier, because I could like meet back up with those people. And it was like, we'd never like left for a year. Like we were already making good connections and having a good time. But the second year was a lot bigger too. It was more than double, I think, the first year.
Right. And then it got bigger even.
And it got bigger last year even. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was huge last year.
And I think they were talking about, they may have not have been able to do it at the Atlantic Conference Center that we went to, because it's gotten so big.
Possibly. Yeah. They talked about moving it to maybe to Texas or something a couple of times, but I think their last plan they had was to still keep it in Georgia. So I'm not sure what's going to happen next year if they have one. I would imagine they probably would try again. But
well, what's going to happen. Everybody does it. Everybody's going to have to go to Vegas eventually.
Yes,
because they got all the big centers out there and they're not convention centers. Yeah, it's like, oh, you can rent. You can rent the casino out. We don't mind.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Actually, have you been to Vegas?
Yes, several times.
Yeah. So I think what's up.
Yeah, I own most of. I donated a lot of the signs on the strip.
You've invested heavily into the Vegas Strip.
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel you.
Actually, the casino that I loved out there was not on the main strip. It was off the strip. It's now the Hooters Hotel, but before that, I can't remember what its name was, but it sat right behind the Tropicana, across the street from the MGM. and it was a casino. And it wasn't, you know, huge, but it was close enough to the strip, but you're not paying on the strip prices. You know, and it was, and then they changed it to the Hooters Hotel, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then we walk in, I'm like, yep, definitely change it to Hooters.
They change it.
Yep.
There was this little place down on the South Strip, not too far from the sign. Just this little hole in the wall on the side of the road. And I love that place because you could get dollar blackjack all day. It's just fun. It was that, you know, the waiters or the servers would come around with the shirts untucked and like the first button on the top of the collar kind of popped. And, you know, it's definitely one of those casinos you see in the comedy movies that just looks like, this place is trash, but it was fun.
Dive.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, Vegas was fun. Losing the money was not, but Vegas was kind of fun. But my ex-wife and I, we always went to a show or something like that every time we went out there. Because the shows are incredible. And they don't have to be the name brand shows. I mean, we went to see, actually, I couldn't believe it. She wanted to go see a topless show. And I was
okay.
Like, little did I know she was going to leave me like 4 years later for a woman. So,
But that was your first clue.
At my point, I was like, I had the coolest wife ever.
Oh, man. Yeah. I haven't seen any of those shows, but there's plenty of good ones out there to see. Cirque shows are fun. And
Yeah. We actually went out to the Circus Circus, and they had a show out there. So the 1 year, basically, gambling was not the priority the 1 year we went. Seeing the sights of Vegas was the priority. And we actually went down to the Hoover Dam and, you know, looked at that and, you know, pretended we were in Vegas vacation, you know, show.
The movie. Were you able to drive across the bridge that year? Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. I did that the year or two before they shut it down. That was neat.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on that thing at Arizona and Nevada. It was like, but that was before they built the bypass bridge.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Yeah, we actually took a tour, went in the dam, and it was a great dam.
Damn great dam.
Damn great dam. It was pretty freaking awesome though. What do you got going on in the shop? What do you got plans for? I mean, you said you're moving.
Right. Yeah, I'm moving within a month, and right now I'm building a sort of a custom desk and cabinet console. I guess you call it like a computer desk or writing desk for a coworker, and I'm hoping to knock that out quickly so I don't have to move it and then finish it. But that's the last thing I have going on in the shop right now. And then after that, it's going to be full on move and set up a new shop. And I've seen so many YouTube makers shops that are giving me ideas for, you know, French cleat walls here and storage there. And, you know, it's I'm looking forward to that aspect of it. And then after that, I got a CNC, which I need to actually use. I have it set up and I've cut a couple things, but haven't gotten much done on that yet.
What are you planning on using that for? I mean, selling stuff, making stuff, or?
For now, just making stuff. I keep having these dreams of making like these elaborate, repeatable custom guitar bodies or bass guitar bodies on that thing. So I want to get into that a lot and just have some files of some custom bass bodies and bass necks that I can reproduce, you know, a little more consistently.
Right.
That's so, definitely one of the things.
So speaking of the, the woodworking side of that, I didn't really know that, you know, like the guitars that you see, I mean, that are electric guitars. Mm-hmm. I never really understood until I started playing one, how they actually worked with the pickups in there. You really don't need any part of that guitar except for the strings and a way to tighten them. So, I mean, the guitar body doesn't do anything for the resonance of the tone. Does it?
Yeah, that's a great debate. Some people will swear that a mahogany body sounds better than an alder body.
Now we're talking electric, not acoustic. Acoustic is totally electric. Different. Yeah.
Acoustic does have a lot more to do with, especially like the hardness of the soundboard and the bracing inside and so forth.
Right.
The size of the guitar. But for electrics, I will say, I think it makes a minor difference in my experience. And if you know Tim Sway and ever watch his content, the guy makes guitars out of 2x4s and it sounds really good. You're right. It's the pickups It's the strings. That has a lot more to do with the tone than the actual wood does.
Right.
So, yeah.
Has anybody ever made a guitar out of pure epoxy?
He made a guitar out of a sheet of acrylic. I don't think he's made one out of pure epoxy. He's made a lot of interesting guitars.
Somebody had to make it out of epoxy. They make everything.
I'm sure someone has. Let's see. Ben Ueda made one from, HDPE, like milk jugs and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember seeing that. Where he actually melted it down and...
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's always a cool thing. I would just wish there was some way easier to recycle, plastics in the home. So you
it's tough.
Use them in the... Yeah. I've watched a couple of videos and you got to buy a toaster oven and it's a lot of handwork. And I'm just like, I don't have the money to do it, but somebody's going to come up with some kind of invention that, you just throw the plastic bottle in there. It'll chop it up and then it'll heat it up and then it'll come out with a plastic sheet.
Yeah. Chop it, heat it, press it, extrude it, whatever. And boom, there you go.
And it'll be, personal. I mean, cause CNCs are the same way. They were out there for years, but they only became small enough to put in your shop within probably the recent 10 years, And now it seems like the market's flooded. So which one did you get?
I have the Onefinity.
Okay.
Yeah. I blame Ben Myers Workshop on that one. He put that video out about, he used to run a Shapeoko and he did a quote breakup video where he was leaving the Shapeoko for the Onefinity, and that video was hilarious. So I've been looking at CNC since 2015 when the X-Car first kind of came out.
Right, because that was the one that it seemed like everybody was getting at the time, and now they're starting, it's pretty much what anything happens. You got something brand new, and it's like it's the only one that is affordable, and then other companies finally go, hey, look what they're doing over there. We can make one cheaper.
Yeah, or better, or improve on it,
Yeah, because I remember...
it's the American way.
Yeah, watching We Built a Thing, and they were talking about, this is a couple of year ago, or a little over a year ago, about getting their X-Carves, and how many little parts bags it took, and how many... And somebody got a new one, and it was like, I pretty much just pulled it out of the box and put the, motor in the carriage, and I was ready to go. All I had to do was upload the software and pretty much I was, not worrying about all those little teeny parts and everything and trying to get it together. And I hate
those. I'm definitely a tinkerer. And I looked at the X Carve, and that's the one thing that kind of turned me off to it. Just, I assemble stuff at work like that a lot. And I know that sometimes if you don't get it set up just right, you can spend more time debugging your machine than actually making stuff. And sometimes that's fun and sometimes it's just not. So when you get, a little bit of shop time, you want to get into the shop and, make something and not spend 3 hours tinkering with a eccentric nut that's not,
Well, I got one of the, since moving up here, there I am surrounded by trees. So of course they didn't pick up any leaves for the last 2 years. So guess who had to, because there's a drain way in the front of the yard that you know, if you don't have it cleaned out, you can end up flooding your neighbor or yourself. So I had to, rake the leaves out. And I was like, I had these huge piles. So I was like, I need to get that DR lawn vac. So I got one of those and it took me 3 days to put it together. And it was just, it was pretty much just putting that freaking bag together. And I've got 2x4s out of there trying to get it. And so I came in and I was frustrated. So I looked up on, YouTube and, here's one. How to put this together. And it was made by the engineers that designed the darn thing. And I'm sitting there going, that's how you. So I went out half an hour later, had it all put together. And I was like, son of a bitch, why don't you tell me? Because I'm reading directions and they weren't that great.
So do you find that watching a YouTube video just even once just makes everything seem to click faster when you go to put something together like that, something complicated?
Yes, I'm a visual kind of guy.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I could see the plans, and I'm like, I can understand them. And, I even actually read them every once in a while. Pretty much the only time a guy's actually do that is when we get stuck and we're like, oh, it'll go back and read the directions now. And well, the one thing that bugged me is when I went to the video and it's actually made by the people that make the darn thing. It's like, this is a companion video to the actual instruction manual. I'm like, seriously? You must follow these steps in the order that they're shown to make the installation and assembly easier. I'm like, why didn't you put that right in the beginning of the manual?
Yeah, page one, here's the link to the video.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But it was amazing how, and I still don't have it done because, so I have the whole assembly done, but now it's the pickup coming out of the chute from the lawnmower, and you actually have to custom fit this piece of plastic to your specific lawnmower, and I burnt out my Dremel. I was using it as a, you know, with a cutting wheel, because I don't know where my jigsaw is. So I was like, this will work. And at one point, I could feel the Dremel getting really hot. The next thing you know, like,
the brushes are fried.
Pretty much. And I was like, huh. And I actually threw I thought I broke, and I did break a router, and it just wouldn't turn, wouldn't spin. And I was like, well, there's really no salvaging anything in here. And then I like 2 or 3 days later, after they, you know, hauled the garbage away, I went, maybe it was just the freaking brushes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah. Didn't even, I mean, you know, I didn't even know about the brushes until I saw what somebody's YouTube video or discussion on. It's like, oh, I lost the brushes. I'm like, brushes?
What are those?
Oh, crap. Oh.
That's the magic that makes the tool go round.
Yeah. I have a stink bug in my house.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And I don't know if they really stink if you smashed them or not.
Don't encourage them. He will stink.
Yeah. I just
let him on his merry way.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. Or I find a jar, put them in that and shake it up and then throw it outside.
There you go. That's the other way to do it.
That is the other way to do it. Speaking of other ways to do it, that was the worst segue in the world. But
that's fantastic. I want to know where you're going with that.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Because I just, you know, stop the car, turn around, make a U-turn.
Run into the pylon.
There is no segue whatsoever. But this is a segue from a segue. We got to take a break because we got sponsors that need to be sponsoring us and, you know, things like that. So we will be back with Alan right after you hear my sultry, sexy voice and maybe Jacob's. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll see you in a little bit. Has your cutting board seen better days? What about those pesky sweat rings on your fine furniture? Do you like to read but find it difficult to hold the book open without your hands getting cramped? Well, friends, we have the place for you. Search Handmade by Vincent Ferrari on your favorite web browser, where his motto is custom for everyone. Whether it's custom woodwork, laser engraving, or jewelry, what you want is only a request away. So visit friend and supporter of the show, Vincent Ferrari, on Instagram and the World Wide Web. Mention code MFIO and Vincent will give you 10% off. If you are in need of a little happy artwork for your home, office, or shop, then be like Jacob and I, and many others, by stopping by the Creative Ward Gallery on Instagram and Facebook. There you will find many beautiful Bob Ross-inspired artworks by the very talented Marion Ward. All are hand-painted, and no two are exactly the same. So join Jacob and I in our support of this happy little art gallery by picking up your work of art, or work of Marion in this case, for your space, or as a gift for family or friends. You won't be disappointed. Mention our podcast, and you'll get free shipping in the United States. That's the Creative Ward Gallery on Facebook and Instagram. And we're back with AC from AC Nail It. We're actually talking in the break about something very interesting. What were we talking about in the break that was very interesting? For some reason, I forgot.
I did too.
Where the hell are you?
Where is the memory of the group?
Where is Jacob? Oh, he's supposed to be doing this. Okay. I don't. Anyway, so I'll remember it eventually because that's what happens. But one thing I do want to remind our listeners that our 52nd episode is coming up very soon because this is episode 50. Like 50 episodes, man. Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
I know. I can't believe that people want to listen to us that long.
But, you guys just hit a milestone here not too long ago, didn't you?
5,000, yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks. I speak for Jacob because he's not here, bastard. But yeah, I predicted that we would hit 5,000 downloads prior to our 52nd episode, and we did. We actually hit it last week.
Ooh, look at you go. So you got the lottery numbers for me?
Pardon? Yeah.
Get the lottery numbers?
No, because okay. If I had the lottery numbers, I would not probably be doing this
podcast. We wouldn't be on this call.
Probably not. I mean, yeah, we might have been. Who knows? I mean, you know, it would just be coming from my, 5,000 square foot, workshop.
If you gold-plated microphone, gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I'd be Snoop Dogg. but anyway, so 52nd episode is coming up, and that's where we get to learn about how Jacob met his fiance, girlfriend, whatever's going on. I think they're engaged. I should really know this about my co-host, but I'm pretty sure they're engaged, or they're just one of those, I haven't asked her, but we already know we're going to get married, that kind of thing.
Yes, the unspoken thing.
Yeah, I've been there. I'm like, oh, are we getting married? Oh, we are. Oh, okay. Let's not do that again. we get to learn that, and it's basically just going to be some banter back and forth between Jacob and I while I tease the living crap out of him playing his first episode of episode zero. So that'll be an interesting episode. Hope everybody enjoys it because we're still trying to figure it out.
Says the name.
Yep.
Trying to revive the figure it out drinking game thing earlier, so it didn't really start up too much, but
yeah, that doesn't work out very well.
Yeah.
I mean, you could actually, that would be kind of cool. But I mean, how many people can you actually get around listening to one, podcast together? Because it's getting drunk with other people. You don't have a drinking problem, but when you drink alone, you have a drinking problem.
Yeah, but the drinking game like circumvents that little rule. So if you're doing a drinking game alone, that's a game, so it's actually legitimate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. But
okay,
who cares?
Agree to disagree, there, Stephen.
Yeah, we'll go with that. but we do, and to celebrate our 52nd episode, May 28th, we are going to start the Raise the Bar Challenge. So it's Makers Figuring It Out, Raise the Bar Challenge. And what that includes is, let me get my notes out here. Let's see, shuffling paper. Basically, you need to make some kind of alcohol beverage display. It's kind of simple. Or anything, supporting alcohol or whatever. We're not worshiping alcohol. But if you want to do a non-alcoholic beverage, you can also do that. But it's something that you would, hang in your bar or put it on the bar or standing on the floor, something to that effect. Pretty much the mind is free to do whatever they have to do. It just wants to, do something with alcohol. So it's kind of like one of those, wine display bottles, your wine displays where you have the wine bottle and you have the two glass flutes coming off the ends of it, and you can carry it around, just display.
That's a video Jacob made, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Something along those lines. It does have to be two different materials or more, but we definitely want, and it can be any type of material. It doesn't have to be wood, but two different types of materials or more. You will be judged on overall appearance, creativity, difficulty, and practicality. So there has to be a practicality portion of this. You just can't, stick it up there. It could be practicality, could be decoration. I've seen, and if you go to Pinterest, there's just so many bar decorations that you can figure out.
Oh, the field's wide open for that.
Oh yeah. So I mean, the sky's the limit. It could be, 4 inches tall. It could be, 4 feet tall. Who knows? Just to alcohol, the cause and solution. All
see, and I problems. Feel like this drinking game thing has to play back into that somehow.
Maybe we could do that. Because we're going to try to do a live episode.
That'd be cool. It,
when we announce the winner. Excuse me. We're going to try and do a live episode. We haven't figured that out either. So there's so much to figure out for that. But that's going to start May 28th, I believe it is. And then it's June 28th is when it stops. So I think that's the date. If not, we'll have it somewhere. Yep, May 28th is when it starts. And then it ends on June 28th, which is a Monday. So that gives you that, you know, 2359 or 59 seconds. Yeah, that kind of thing. It was so much easier when I'm, you're in the military, you're telling military time. You don't have to get, you know, I don't get
it. Yeah, 2359, 59, boom.
9 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock at night? I really love the people that are like, 4 in the morning? Why would I want to go have a doctor's appointment at 4 in the morning?
It's like the Top Gun scene where someone says, we leave at like, I don't know, 0600 hours. And he says, is that AM or PM?
Yeah, pretty much. Or is that PM? I figured that out. So if you haven't figured out military time, I don't know how to help you. But this is just the only thing way you can tell. Anything above 12, subtract 12. And that's what time it is. So if it's 1301, subtract 12, that's 101. There you go. There, a little education.
For just today. That easy.
It is. And then after a while, you can't get it out of your brain.
Right.
Now, what were we talking about in the break?
Well, we were talking about recording a podcast.
Oh, I know what we were talking about.
And,
thank you.
And Anchor and whatever else.
And Anchor and all that stuff. Actually, Alan, you and I, we found out that we have something more in common besides woodworking. We both ran sound for bands.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Yep. That was actually, that was really fun sometimes.
Yeah, I think I was mentioning that I had run sound or recorded the We Built the Thing podcast's live episode at Workbench Con. And that kind of spurred the conversation about that. Yeah, like I said, yeah. in the break, I play bass, which means I'm also the sound guy for my band. And so I had several years of running sound live for, you know, the band. We played bar gigs and things like that.
And you were the bass player, right? Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, that's me, holding down the low end.
Yep. So what kind of music did you guys play?
The most recent band I was in, we played mostly like funk, soul, disco, groove kind of stuff, you know, Tower of Power and James Brown and just, okay. Yeah, if it's groovy, danceable, love getting the people on the dance floor, you know.
Well, that's how you can tell the thing for us. That's how you tell you're doing a good job.
Right. It's like alcohol, you know, plus bass equals good time.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I was a DJ for many years and, you know, that was the automatic feedback when you're a DJ. If you can bring people out to the dance floor and keep them out there, you're doing a great job. And I guess I was doing a pretty good job because they're like, Steve, stop playing so many good songs. Why? We're tired. We need a break.
Dancing too hard.
I'm like, well, then stop dancing for a little while. But you're playing all these good songs. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, can't help it. I'm just
no, I just, it was, if there was one job that I could do for the rest of my life, that would have been it.
Oh, really?
Maybe not now. I'm a little out of tune with the music now because I'm, you know, I've gotten to that age where I listening to the quote unquote oldies, you know, the hair metal bands from the 80s and 90s and, you know, Kacha Goo Goo and the Duran Duran and those kind of things. And you just, now I understand my parents. As you get older, you're kind of like, I don't understand the music these days. You youngins with your bebopping and your bouncing and your cursing and all that, I don't get it at all.
Uh-uh. Yeah, it's crazy. We're going to look back in, you know, 20, 30 years and bands like, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or the, you know, the Will Smith or the Tool or whoever is going to be like, oh, it's the oldies. That's, you know, it's the oldies rap. That's the oldies uh-huh. metal.
I mean, when I was growing up, the oldies were the 50s.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. No, those are the groups my parents listened to. Like, mm-hmm. Listen to that. You were the, what did they call them? Beboppers or slickbacks or something.
It was the greasers. With the
hair. Greasers. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like my dad was actually a greaser. He actually had the leather jacket, the leather biker, and everything. Nice. I was like, nice. My dad was cool. I don't know what happened because I'm definitely didn't get the cool gene from him.
I grew up listening to Led Zeppelin. I mean, my dad would play those records, you know, back in the I guess the late 70s or early 80s when I remember hearing them. And I thought that was pretty cool, especially now since I love Led Zeppelin.
And they just, well, they just stick.
Yeah.
And it's a, it was a time, it's a time before synthesizers, synthesized music.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the 80s kind of ushered in the synthesizer, and you could see it actually was pretty much the 70s, the late 70s, early 80s. If you go back and you watch Knight Rider or Chips or things like those kind of oldie shows, you can hear the transition from, you know, bands and live music to some kind of person sitting behind a computer or a keyboard playing, you know, with dog sounds, because that's how the, you know, Christmas dog, the barking dogs for, you know, Jingle Bells came along.
Yeah, I mean, the Moog type synthesizers have been around since the 60s, but they didn't become the star of the show, like you say, until the 80s. And at that point, it just sort of, you know, took a life of their own.
Well, yeah. I think at one point, guitars were actually not the center stage. They were not, they were the backup instruments. At the time, it was the piano was the front instrument. And then everybody moved back from there. And then somehow the lead guitarist and the bass player came out front, and then they leave that poor drummer in the background.
But you can still hear the guy.
Yeah.
Believe me.
But that's the one cool thing. And I didn't know until I started running sound for the band. There's a reason why people stand where they do in a band.
Okay.
Because they can feel the music, and why they have to have their amplifiers, you know, so high, because when you're up on stage, you could barely hear what you're playing.
Yeah. I've been all over different places on the stage, and it's, I like to be beside the drummer, and I like to have my bass cabinet right up against my back. Everybody else can be wherever they want to be.
Yep. That's usually what the bass player, they just like to stand in one place and just do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it, but yeah, there was, it was kind of funny the first time, because I also sing a little poorly, but I got up on the stage a couple times and with the band, because they would pull me up and I'd have to sing, and I was horrible. But, actually, it was freaking awesome. But I didn't have, I couldn't believe it, because it's so loud out in front of the stage. But when you're on stage, it's not that loud.
It's very different, yeah.
It's a very different sound. But if, and you know, if you don't have a good sound, man, you sound like crap.
Oh, that's true.
You know,
it definitely helps to have the guy out front run to the board.
Yeah, that was the only problem though. I couldn't be out in front and run the board.
Yeah, they
always had me on the side, and I'm like, so I'd have to walk out and remember the settings and go, okay, move back. And you know, we didn't have one of those fancy boards where you're like, oh, they're playing this song, push a button and everything adjusts automatically.
Mm-hmm. I've been there. I got you. Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Where are we in the show? Where are we? We're in the show. What time is it? Yeah. These are the things that I would edit out if I had to. Oh, where's your, where are my notes? Damn it, Jacob. It's all your fault for not being here.
Jacob ate them. Shoot.
He really did. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah. I was on the notes for the challenge, which is, you know, the raise the bar
challenge. Raise the bar challenge.
Raise the bar challenge. You know, I have to bring alcohol into it. I don't know why, but, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. So, Alan, where do you get your inspiration from, or what gets you into the shop? You know, what's your motivating factor? Or what gives you inspiration to get out there?
What gives me the most inspiration is either I'll see someone who I follow, let's say on YouTube or Instagram, make something, and I'll say, I'm going to make that too. The challenge of reproducing something I see sometimes is just drives me to the point where I have to do it. You know, the first mallet I did, the first time I saw someone make a woodworking mallet on YouTube, I thought, good grief, that's beautiful. I've got to get out there and do that too. So I worked at it until I got what I was happy with. That's one of the big things. And then the other thing is, if I get an idea in my head about something, I'm driving to work or at work, something happens, or a friend mentions like, oh, it'd be cool if I had this, you know, this thing. I'll think, oh, I can do that. And here's how I'm going to do it. And I can do this and I can do that. I'll run out to the shop, you know, and start tinkering or drawing things up. That's the two probably biggest things. I guess the third thing is if someone commissions me to make something for them, you know, get out there and do that too. But
oh, so you do commission work?
What kind of work? I've done some. I say commission, I mean not only just like paid commission, but I mean someone says, hey, you know, could you build a sign?
Can you make this one?
Friends and family, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I don't have those.
Friends or family?
Yeah, friends or family. They don't want to see anything that I made.
Tough to get commissions in. You have to stick with strangers.
Yeah, and it's, well, because, well, your family, you're going to charge me for it? Well, yeah.
You're just, 2x4s are $20. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, this two by four bench that I just built is like $500.
Yeah.
You only bought 7 pieces of lumber. I know. You know, it's kind of funny when the price of labor is cheaper than the price of materials.
That's
a sad thing. That's pretty much what it's coming down to be almost.
It's hovering right around that.
Yeah. So what is one of the favorite things besides, you know, the mallet? What other things have you actually built that you really, really enjoyed, or you saw out, you know, on the YouTube or Instagrams or wherever? And you're just like, I'm going to make that. I mean, you actually have a lot of stuff on your Instagram page. So go check it out.
I should go check it out myself and see what I made.
I know it's kind of weird. You got to go, you go back. And cause I was like, did I send him a mallet at one time? I'm like, I think I did. And I had to go back on mine and I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. Okay. That was
it. Crazy. The things you forget about, like yourself, the things that you've done on your own for yourself or for other people. If it's more than a year ago, I have a hard time remembering it, you know.
If it happened yesterday, I have a hard time
remembering it. Well, true, true. I think it's the things I really like making is unique things. I'm thinking back now to some of the projects I've made over the past year or so. I just built a custom gun stock for a friend for a lever action rifle. Mm-hmm. And he wanted something a little fancier than the stock that came with the gun. And I said, well, never done it before, but I'll give it a try. And it was tough. I'll tell you, it was a challenge for sure. It was a lot like building an instrument, actually. A lot of tight joints and pockets you have to kind of cut out, and a lot of finessing curves and things like that. But that turned out really well. I was happy with that.
Is that the one, Nick? Yeah, it's on your page. One of the most recent ones.
Yeah, it's pretty recent. Yeah, yeah. It's got some really highly figured curly walnuts.
Oh, yeah. That is pretty, man. You did a good job.
Yeah, that turned out really nice. I was happy with that. Definitely a learning curve.
Well, you know, did you have a template, or did they give you the old stock and you just kind of copied that?
Yeah, no, I had the whole rifle. So I would disassemble it, use that to create. I 3D printed several router jigs to help me create the different angled pockets inside where the stock meets the gun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's several shallow and deep offsets and pockets and stuff, so I created some 3D templates, 3D printed templates to kind of line my router up. And then I would just, you know, sand and file and test it and sand and file. I probably had that thing on and off 30 times, just getting that fit just right, you know.
Right, yeah, finessing it instead of, you know, doing like some people when they start, is just, I'm going to cut, instead of, you know, cutting a little extra, I'm going to cut right on the line. Next thing you know, damn it, I got to make a new one.
Yeah, actually, I did that a couple of times. I had to start over a couple of times with some pieces.
Well, I mean, we all learn from our mistakes. And the one thing that I remember is when I used to watch the new Yankee workshop with Norm. He'd always have one already made. And then he would film the workings of the other. And I always thought, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to start to try and do that when I get the shop back together, is actually doing a test.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, that way, and you make it out of, you know, well, I was going to say, you just make it out of cheap wood, like pine. Well, that's not
the same. It's more expensive than walnut sometimes.
Actually, I think it is.
I mean, right now I can go find some, you know, Sawyer friends of mine in this area and get rough sawn walnut, maple, hickory for cheaper than I can get the 2x4 by the per board foot. So
Yeah, I've checked around here, and the rough average is probably like $4 a board foot, $4 to $5 a board foot for walnut up here, which I was paying $3 in Tennessee.
Well, but yeah, walnuts were everywhere down there.
Yeah, but it was, let's put it this way, it wasn't the greatest walnut. There was a lot of checking and a lot of cracks and, you know, some punkiness in there. And
yeah,
so, I mean, I wasted a lot. So, you know, but he brought down the prices. So, but luckily I found a couple people up here that actually, you know, are sawyers, and some of them have their own mills and some of them aren't that far away.
That's good people to know right there.
It really is. Cause, you know, they'll call you up and say, hey, I got this, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's what Drew over at Fisher's shop, he got a really darn good deal on walnut.
Oh, yeah, he did.
And he's been making that. I think that's where the unnecessary walnut came from, is because he had so much.
And yeah, he's still burning through that pile. I think he's getting close to the end of the pile.
He's almost at the end of it now.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I wonder what we're going to have, you know, an exotic wood like, you know, unnecessary pine.
Yeah, it could happen.
It could, because, I mean, yep. Well, they're predicting all the shows and, you know, news programs that I've watched. They're saying that the wood prices aren't going to be this high, but it may be a very long time before they go down to like $2 for a 2x4.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we're ever going to actually see the prices we saw pre-pandemic. Nope. I think they're going to come back down, but I don't think we're going to see, around here, $250 for 8-foot 2x4 was kind of like the standard price. You know, it's the right price I remember paying for most of my projects. I don't think we'll see it under $3, $3.50, $4 a board.
I'm thinking more of we're going to, you know, each 2x4 is going to be $5.
Yeah. Right now they're about $8.50 up here.
Yeah. They're expensive because I was, yeah. And then when I actually looked it up on the internet, because I pulled up an old receipt that I had, because in Lowe's and Home Depot, I think you can have it emailed to you, and that's how I do it. That's how I do it. That way I have every receipt just in case, you know, I ever want to start a business. You have that receipt and you're not, and it's not paper, so you can't lose it really.
Sure.
So I just take that, put it in a folder, and there it is. Now, granted, I don't have a business, so I don't care. But I look back and I'm like, I know I bought some 2x4s. And I looked and I was like, holy crap, it was $1.98.
Yeah.
For an 8-foot 2x4. And I went to Lowe's and I'm like, $8.95. What the?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then I got some oriented strand board, which is, you know, the cheapest of, you know, plywood or pretty much. And it was like, I bought 15 planks or
sheets panels, of that stuff.
Sheets. Thank you. For the wood shop down in Tennessee. For that, the same price that I paid, I think it was like $40 or $50 for, you know, 15 of them. I mean, it wasn't expensive at all. Mm-hmm. But now it's like $60 for one.
That's insane.
I was like, okay, yeah, we're not okay. We're just gonna make the shop, and that's about it, because it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, we always thought the gas prices were, but this doesn't affect everybody. It only affects, you know, people who build homes and woodworkers. Because what did I see today that it's right now the way the prices of wood are, it's actually adding like $35,000 to a, you know, building. Our home built.
Yeah. Or more.
Or more. Yeah. Can you imagine that? You know, you're like, you negotiated the price for like, you know, $350. And then they come back and like, this is going to be more like $400.
A guy I know, his son had a contract 2 years ago to have a house built this year. And I think the house was in, you know, it's probably in the 300,000-400,000 range. And they came back and said, if we build it starting today, it's going to cost you close to $600.
Yeah, because of all the wood. And you're like,
the wood, well, the wood's gone up, the labor's gone up, demand's gone up. So the supply and demand on the construction teams and crews has gone up. You know, the price on those, it's trickling upward in a lot of directions. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's the same thing around here. I've asked for several quotes from my deck back is not the greatest. It wasn't structured properly. Granted, it's held up for 26 years. But I looking at it going, that's 26 years it's held up, but I don't know how. So
well, make 27.
Yeah. So I just wanted it restructured, you know, basically just lift the whole deck up, removed, you know, the crappy whatever they did, and then puts the new trusses up and things like that. And I guess people are making so much money now for contracting that they don't call you back.
Yeah.
Because I've actually had to bug the contractor. You know, like, hey, yeah, are you going to do some windows, or are we just, am I going to find somebody new? It's kind of ridiculous, because I'm like, you make a living out of this and you have this kind of customer service, you suck.
Yeah, well, so many of these people are, I mean, they're frying bigger fish. I mean, they have bigger jobs to do with more dollars. I mean, yeah, honestly, if they're booked up, they're going to take the $10,000 job, not the $1,000 job, you know?
Oh, yeah. So then you find those, you know, those, what do they call them? Handymen.
Flyby nights.
Yeah, the handymen that, you know, don't know what they're doing. So, I mean, I literally was like, because not that I not distrust any of the big box stores when you go there to ask, you know, hey, you know, let's go back to the windows section, looking for the windows. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of, I'm like, how much am I paying for this service, you know, through the big box stores instead of going to an actual window supply installer that specializes in that? But you get more, you get faster service from going to the big box stores. So I'm like, because I had somebody come out because I want to put siding on the house, and they wanted $28,000. I'm like, what are you?
Good grief.
I'm like, and that's not even wood. That was just vinyl.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, I know. And I'm like, well, if you don't get the insulated kind, you can knock off $6,000. Oh, good. So it's 22.
Yeah. And cold. So
I was thinking at the most it was going to be like 15, maybe 16.
Yeah.
And when he came out with that, I'm like, is it made of gold?
Yeah, gold lining and insulation.
Yeah, but the one thing, the other guy that came out, I asked him, because he actually specializes in putting up siding. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you think about the insulated siding? And he's like, yeah, I wouldn't get it. And I went, why? He goes, pretty much it deteriorates after a while. Like one or two, or, you know, 5 years, because of just the expansion and contraction. He said it usually just, he said it's a good idea. It gives you three, you know, an R value of 3. But he's like, when we put our stuff on, we're going to put pretty much insulation on the outside of the house and put a wrap around that and then put the sheets up. And I was like, oh, okay. He hasn't got back to me yet either with the price.
Yeah, good man.
I'm like, good God, you know, and it's,
come on, people, help us out.
All I'm trying to do is just insulate my house for the winter, because it was freezing in here.
Yeah, it was a cold winter for sure.
Yeah. So what's the new house looking like? You gonna bigger shop? Because right now you're in a one car garage, or?
I'm in a one car garage, and I'm moving up to a two car garage. So double the space, and
to 200 to 220 to 440 roughly.
Basically. Yeah. And I'm going to actually get some 240 volt power running into there too, so I can get a higher power welder.
Nice.
Looking forward to that.
Bigger house, or that, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, sure. It's a bit bigger.
You have any kids?
No kids. It's a bigger house. Okay. It's just laid out. This is a decent sized house we're in now, but it's laid out really kind of oddly. It's four floors, so it's kind of one of those deals where no one floor of the house is very big, and so yeah, we're just changing the structure of the house a bit, and
what do they call that, a split level?
It's like a
basement.
It's like a basement. Quad split, sort of.
Yeah, because that's what I grew up in.
Yeah,
we had a basement, then you went into the what we call the rec room. Yeah. But it was pretty much a living mm-hmm. room. Then you went up another short flight of stairs, and that went into the living room, the dining room, and the kitchen. Then you go up the next set of stairs, and that was the bedroom.
That's exactly the house I'm in now.
There you go. Yeah, I didn't like that. I mean, my mother loved that mm-hmm. house. And as I'm getting older, I'm looking at houses going, yeah, I want a ranch, just one level. That way, because, I mean, in Pennsylvania, they did a lot of Victorian mm-hmm. homes, but they did a lot of row homes.
Yeah, sure.
And some of these houses are, you know, 100 years old. Like my aunt lives in one that's 150 years old. It was one of the first ones built in that area. And I was like, huh, 150. I mean, it's still solid, but it's very narrow.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, shit, I think it's maybe 25 feet across.
Oh, good grief.
And that's pushing it. You know, so they're really tiny, but I don't know how people, you know, get up in years. I mean, because it's going to happen. You're getting it up in years and you got to climb up those stairs. And some people are still doing it. My aunt is 88. It's going to be 88 or 89 this year. And she still lives in that house. She still climbs up the 10-foot ceiling stairs. Because, I mean, those old houses, they made the ceiling higher because it rises.
Yeah, I figure I'll just get one of those chair lifts and go up the steps. And
That's what I thought, but it all depends. I mean, but if you have a three-story house, you have to have three chair lifts.
Yeah, that's true.
Or two chair
lifts. Or two chair lifts anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I was just like, you know what, but I'm also designing.
Two times the fun.
Yeah, I'm also designing my own home, so I can make it wherever, however I want to.
That's right.
You know. So is this a pre-built one? You're just buying it, or?
Yeah, it was built in the late 90s. So.
Okay.
I couldn't even imagine trying to design and build my own home right now. I wouldn't even do it.
Yeah, I'm not. Well, it's kind of a small hobby that I can actually do. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, back hurts a little, so I don't want to so much. It sucks getting old. Don't do it.
Okay, that was my plan all along. So yeah.
Yeah, don't do it because you're a young svelte man, and I'm an old svelte man. a little more rounded than I expected to be at this age.
You're well rounded. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm a well rounded guy. I forgot. You didn't, man. See, with Jacob, it's all your fault, man. I forgot to shout out our sponsors. We do have some sponsors over at Buy Me a Coffee. And I know Tony Langer is one, and then Dave from First Do Woodworks is the other, I believe. See, this is why Jacob's supposed to be here. You know, he does this sport. I do my thing. He does his thing, and you know, now there it is. Okay, yep. Dave First Do Woodworks and Tony Langer over at Langer Works. We want to give them a shout out for sponsoring us over there at Buy Me a Coffee. So, and then you heard from Vince and Marion at the break. They're also our sponsors. So I want to send them a big thank you for sponsoring this show. And remember, if you want to sponsor the show, please do, because all the proceeds go right back into this show to keep trying to give you guys some more, you know, bling. I think we got some stickers coming. And if you do the challenge, there's going to be special stickers for those people.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. It's going to be like a participation trophy. That's pretty much what it's going to be like. I'm like, oh, look, I got a sticker from Makers Figuring It Out. Oh, it's a participation trophy. Oh, speaking of that, if you guys want to donate any kind of, you know, prizes or, you know, tchotchkes or whatever, we have a couple people that's already, you know, stood up and said, hey, I'm going to donate this to that. Just send Jacob or I a DM or send us an email at makersfiguringitout@gmail.com. And also, if you have any, you know, reviews or anything you want to talk about, or, you know, you'd like to hear from, or anybody that, you know, you'd like to hear from on the show, just send us those comments too. Once again, that's makersfiguringitout@gmail.com. You can also find us on the Instagram at, of course, makersfiguringitout.com.
Those items you're talking about donating, that goes toward the Raise the Bar challenge as a gift?
Those will be part of the prize.
Cool. Yep. Okay.
I already do know that there's going to be a $100 gift certificate or gift card for Amazon.
Ooh, that's so fancy.
Yeah, well, I try.
I mean, who can't use that?
Who can? That's why I'm giving it. That's my donation to it. So I think Jacob's throwing in a nail.
A nail?
Yeah. Pretty much,
you know, I've got a few of those I can donate for you.
But I wanted to remind everybody about that. I just shut my show notes. Way to go, Steve.
Rebooting. All
righty. So I think we're pretty much at the time that we do our maker shout outs for this week. And as always, we always let the guests go first. So if there's anybody out there, Alan, that you'd like to, you know, shout out and say, hey, they're doing a great job, or, you know, follow these people, just give them a shout.
Yeah, sure. I think someone I definitely want to shout out is a fella who lives here in my hometown. His name is Grant Irby of Irby Woodworks.
Irby Woodworks. Is that with the U or
that's R? That's an I-R-B-Y. Yeah, he just moved to this area, I guess it was last year, moved from out of state, and while he was looking for a job, he started doing some woodworking in his spare time, and he's making a bit of a business of it. He's doing some fine tables, farmhouse decor, just all kinds of things. He's getting better and better every week. He's showing all of his projects on his Instagram channel, and it's really impressive. And the guy's got not even 300 followers, so good dude. Yeah. If you want to check out some really cool furniture and things, go check out his Instagram page, Irby Woodworks. And give the guy a little follow, a little like, whatever.
A little follow, a little like. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. Looking for him right now.
Yeah, his page is still pretty new, but I think he's crushing it with his different woodworking projects. Really impressed with him. Yeah.
Cool. That's real cool. Oh, I know who I wanted to shout out. Now I got to find them. For crying out, Jiminy Crickets. I have so many people that I'm following now. I'm trying to get back into the maker thing and, you know, start to, you know, actually being more noticed on Instagram. And
When you move, it's tough. Like I've shut my page down more or less for the past, you know, 2 months. I haven't put much up on there. And I think while I'm moving, it's going to be another month before I'm even kind of active. So it's easy to lose touch, you know?
It really is. And, you know, we had that, Jacob and I took that break because of me moving, and we were gone for about a month or something like that. And, you know, that helped, but I didn't get done nearly half the stuff that I thought I was going to get done.
Oh yeah.
That's what happens when you're, you know, taking care of your elderly parents.
Sure.
You know, it's not easy, but I'm not, you know, give me some sympathy. That's okay. but I do want to shout out these people. They're pretty, this guy. Yeah, that's it. He's actually, I think, up in Snohomish, Washington. Yeah, there it is, Snohomish, Washington. And it took me forever to learn how to pronounce that name. It's like, what? They got a lot of issues up there. There's there's Snohomish, there's Squahomish, they're all Homishes. And it's like, wow, okay. But I think he's retired Coast Guard, pretty sure. I mean, because his name is Puddle Pirates Project. So he does say he's a husband, father, and a veteran, but he makes some incredible things. I think he's actually going to be building a boat.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's him. If not, they make some really cool stuff out there. He's always doing something on Facebook, always doing something on Instagram. But yeah, go check him out. That's the Puddle Pirate Project. So, Puddle Pirate Projects. Say that three times fast when you're drunk.
I think he's got a Onefinity CNC also.
Does he?
Yeah.
Look at you. I'm just connecting everybody around here.
That's right. It's part of the team.
Yeah. Oh, I do see it. The Infinity or Onefinity.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also got a, I guess he's, you know, enjoying his mustache too. He had some mustache things going. But go check him out. He's on Instagram there at Puddle Pirate Projects. He's got a link tree also. So go check him out there. And so we have come to that part of the show there, Alan. So this is the part of the show that everybody wants to hear. Well, nobody said they don't want to hear it. So we're just going to assume that they want to hear it.
By default.
By default, everybody wants to hear it because we haven't heard anything on the contrary. So, but what we answer our guest is you have a choice. You can tell us how you met your significant other, or you can tell us who your favorite celebrity crush is. And they can be both in the same.
If she was a celebrity, she would be my celebrity crush, but she's not. So, you know, we met the way most of these, you know, the kids meet here in the 2010s. We met online. It's kind of funny. We actually met and started chatting online and so forth and definitely hit it off. And it wasn't too long into the conversation that I realized she was best friends with the guitarist in my band.
You gotta love that.
I'm like, dude, you couldn't introduce us in person.
Like, so, I can do it now.
Yeah, so we definitely had a connection there, and that was pretty cool.
So were you using one of those, you know, apps, or were you sliding right or swiping right or left? Or
it was the POF, the Plenty of Fish, I think.
Plenty of Fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some special people on that thing.
There's some special people on all of them.
There are some special people on all. You know what? And I'm going to say this, and I don't care who gets mad. Anybody that's on any of those platforms, there's something wrong with you. There's got to be, because.
Well, I guess there's something wrong with her and something wrong with that, but
yeah. Well, there's something wrong with me too. So, but yeah, everybody has some kind of baggage, but it just seems like some of the people that I've met there are like, well, my uncle, he's in the jail right now, and I'm living with his wife. You mean your aunt? Yeah, that's, and my cousins, and my grandson, and I'm like, oh, and I work a lot, and I'm on disability. I'm like, oh, you know, not that there's anything wrong with being, on disability or anything like that. It's just you kind of know. You just, and I've had a really hard time throughout my life of picking the right women. I always pick the ones that needed rescue, and yep, I rescued them. And then they do what most people do when they rescue you. They leave your ass. But how long you guys been together? You just said you got married in what, October last year?
Yeah, I just got married last year. We've been together for about 6 years now.
Okay. Very good.
So nice long courtship, as the people in the 20s would say.
Yeah, that is true. You know, because did you guys live together prior to? Did you live in sin prior to getting married?
Yes, we did, sir.
Okay. I just make sure that's how you kids roll nowadays.
Yeah. Our pastor didn't give us too much crap about it, so that was all right.
Yeah, unless you're, and I know this from personal experience, unless you're Catholic, pretty much nobody really cares anymore. Mm-hmm. Even some of the Catholic people don't really care anymore. But I kind of, because years ago it wasn't that way, you know. No, I just want to take a test drive before, you know. Before I purchase it, and you don't, I mean, man, back in the day, you didn't know what you got when you got married if you didn't live together prior to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, and I'm not talking the toothbrush, you know, leaving the cap off the top of the toothpaste or something like that. It's, I've had some really bad experiences. I digress. But so 6 years, huh? So you guys from the same town or
pretty close, actually? Yeah, she grew up about an hour south of me, so not too far away. Yeah.
No. So what'd you do? You guys just meet up in the middle, or were you the gentleman and drove all the way down to go meet her the first time? Am I being too nosy?
No, not too nosy. Okay. I think I'm trying to remember, like, I guess the first time we met, she came up to see me play in a band. So she technically drove to see me, although we weren't dating at the time.
Right.
At the beginning of the dating, I think I drove down to not too far from where she was. It's kind of in the middle, I'd say. It was a convenient place to meet for a baseball game. So.
Okay. And you were like, come on, baby. I play in a band. I'm a bass player. You know,
never works. If you're the bass player, that never works. No.
No. It's only, what is it? Only the lead singer and the lead guitarist?
Yeah. The singer, the guitarist, they get all the spotlights.
Well, unless you're, no, that was Slash. He was actually the lead guitar. Who's the famous bass player? Is it in Metallica? I can't remember the guy's name. I think he pretty much brought the bass guitar forward even more than it was.
There's been a few of those, although if I started naming some names, I'm not sure who would pick up on it.
That is true. Yeah, I don't know. There's somebody out there that, you know, that's happened to.
Oh, yeah. There's a few.
There is. Well, Alan, I have to say that I've enjoyed our chat. I'm glad you were able to come on. We had some scheduling conflicts, but they all kind of worked out pretty well for us.
Yeah, exactly. This is a great day to do it.
Yeah, except for, you know, Jacob not being here.
Except for that little detail with the other guy on the show.
I know, because
have a talk with that fella.
Well, let's see. The first time that Jacob actually did one on his own, I couldn't make it. I was just either under the weather or something was going on. He did one on his own, and he did a really great job. And it was the number one for a while, that actual episode. And I was like, was it me? Because I wasn't there, or
was it me?
Was it me? Is that why it went? So, you know, if we see a dip in this, it's probably not you.
I never know.
Yeah, because everybody, it's like you're like that guy that nobody can get mad at, except for your wife. She can probably get mad at you. But you seem like
maybe
you seem like you're always, you know, in a good mood most of the
time. Yeah, you usually try to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it just makes life miserable if you're not.
There you go.
But, yep,
can't have that.
No. So, AC, where can we find you at?
Well, I'm on Instagram. You can find me, AC Nailed It, and I'm on YouTube. I think I actually have my official YouTube name now, so you should be able to go to youtube.com/ACNailedIt. And I have a webpage, acnailedit.com. So basically, if you type in AC Nailed It, you'll probably find me somewhere.
Right out loud.
Something.
Well, because usually when I do my research, I go to their Instagram page and you just have your, did you have your link tree?
I think I have my YouTube channel linked.
You have your
YouTube
channel there. That's right. Cause there was nothing else. Usually what I see is people have their webpage and then the webpage, you know, shoves them to the YouTube channel, but I'm not telling you how to work. I'm not telling you how to do your business.
I need to check out this, this link tree thing. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. I didn't even know about it until Jacob actually set it up. So it's kind of, I think you can send it to your YouTube channel because I think we had Char on. Doesn't matter. You're going to know this anyway. We had Char from the Wooden Maiden.
Press.
And she had a huge Linktree page. So, I mean, it was like, wow, so you can actually link a lot of stuff to it. So I'm pretty sure. So very that's cool. It. That's it. Usually I would talk to Jacob right now, but he's not here. I feel bad. I miss my buddy.
But he'll be back soon. Don't worry, man. He'll be back.
He'll be back. All righty. So if you don't mind, Alan, I'm going to take us home and we can go, you know, do what we got to do later on.
Very cool. I appreciate you having me on.
We appreciate you being here, buddy. So, well, here at Makers Figuring It Out, it is our mission to educate, motivate, and inspire, and we hope we've done that for you today. So this is Steve and the absent Jacob reminding you to keep learning, to keep being motivated, keep getting inspired, and keep figuring it out. And we'll see you guys next time, or hear you guys next time, but you know what I mean. So you guys take care. Bye.